So before we get started, raise your hand if this is the first time you've come to this DB class. Okay, so there's like, everybody look around and see the hands up. So there's like six new people. So thank you for letting me know that, because next week is the test. but it's not, you don't have to take the test, just being silly. But at some point I'll probably get you all into small groups so you can help the people who this is their first time with all of your knowledge and things that we've been talking about. And if you didn't know, this module is on death and rebirth, and it's not the first of the modules in the Discovering Buddhism class. So it's in sequence, and you come to this part of the DB class schedule for a kind of reason. And death and rebirth are considered really important parts of Tibetan Buddhism, as probably most of you know. And we're talking about then the continuation of consciousness and what do we do in our life and during our death to help us prepare ourselves and prepare our consciousness for moving on to the best rebirth possible. So that's what we've been talking about a lot during this module. And we always start with just settling down, setting our motivation, no matter what practice you're doing in Buddhism. One of the bookends of it are like a really good intention and setting your motivation, and then really good dedication. And then in the middle, remembering why you're doing it. So, you know, good strong beginning, good practice, and good dedication. So we're going to start now by getting in a meditative position. So if you're sitting in a chair, just make sure both of your feet are flat on the floor, that your back is as straight as possible. If you're sitting on a cushion, cross-legged, and then you want to put your left hand just about an inch or so below your navel, right palm on top, and your fingers just gently touching. So you're making like this little circle here. And your thumbs are just barely together as though you're holding a piece of paper there. Bring your arms out a little bit from your body so they're not collapsed in. This helps your breathing. Again, try to be mindful of your spine, that they're just like coins stacked on top of each other. You're not arching too far forward or slouching. And then you tuck your chin, if you can, so that the back of your neck is straight as well. Put your tongue at the back of your teeth so that your jaw is not clenched. And this also, if you're meditating for a long time, helps you not to drool. And then you close your eyes or keep them just a little bit open so that light comes in to keep you alert, and so that you can also be, you know, mindful that there's not this big difference between inside and outside. And then you're going to bring all your attention and focus onto your breath. And as you exhale, try to let go everything from the day, all the thoughts and worries, any physical tension, fatigue, discomfort. Try to exhale that out and inhale bright, fresh, pure energy, filling every cell in your body from head to toe. And then this exhaling all of the negative that you need to let go of. And you can count each inhalation and then each exhalation cycle as one. You can count them up to 10. If you lose track of the count, just come back. Trying to let the thoughts that arise, as soon as you recognize these thoughts arising, just see that that's what's happening and let them settle back down like a wave rising up. And then settling down as soon as you've spotted it. now bring all that attention that you're focusing on your breath to just your consciousness itself. Try to watch your own mind. It's like watching an ocean. Try to just sense your consciousness, the energy of that immense consciousness that's coursing through you. Now with a more focused and present mind, concentrate for a minute on your intention, your motivation for being here tonight. Personally, why are you here? What is your hope? To gain more information, knowledge, to lead a better life, have a better death? And then we try to increase that motivation to include as many others as possible. So we can think about the calmer we are in our life and in our death, the happier we will be and all those around us. The more knowledge and information and wisdom we gain, the more chances for our escape from this samsaric prison, the closer we are to enlightenment, so that we can help everyone else follow that same way out. And then because we're thinking and talking and working on the topic of death and rebirth, I'm going to list the advantages and disadvantages while you're in this state. And the disadvantages that's listed for not meditating on death is you'll not remember the Dharma. Remember the Dharma being the teachings that help us completely end our suffering and others. If we're not meditating on death, we don't remember that. And even if we remember, we don't really practice it. And if we're not using death to kind of keep us awake and alert, even if we practice it, we'll not practice it purely. It'll be stained by the 8 worldly dharmas. And even if we practice, our practice will not be persistent. If we're not recalling death, we will create many negative actions. And then we will have regrets at the time of death. The benefits of meditating on death. Our actions will become very beneficial. We won't be wasting time, so our actions will be beneficial, and our spiritual practice will become very powerful, much more focused and potent. So it's important to meditate on death in the beginning of our practice. It's important in the middle of our practice. It's important at the end of our practice. So then the sixth benefit is that we will die with a peaceful, happy mind, free of regrets. really try to anchor yourself into those benefits, remembering that the purpose of our life is our positive spiritual progress. Okay, and then open your eyes when you're ready. Before I forget, for those of you who are new tonight, if you go on the Kadampa Center website, in the top right-hand corner, I think it's in pretty faint print, they'll say member login. Does that ring a bell to other people? You click on there, and you can create an account. And, you know, it's just a name and a password. You create it, and I think within 24 hours you will get, no? Okay. But I think that kind of works some of the kinks out. So you should be able to get your account then set up within 24 hours. And the reason I bring that up is you can go there. Once you open that page, you'll see something that says Discovering Buddhism. You can click on that, and if you haven't, you can get access to some of the readings. If you haven't bought the CD for this whole course, then some of it's available for you there if you're a DB student. You can also listen to some of the recordings. There was a monk who came here, Venerable Renee. So you can click on his teachings and listen to a wonderful meditation that he led when he was here about two weeks ago. So I'd really encourage everybody to do that. And also, I have some handouts for you that I've been passing out during this last several weeks. So let's just start. I left everybody with the 8 Worldly Dharma handout. And actually, maybe I should just go ahead and pass those out now. Any thoughts, comments, things you want to talk about from the week? Yeah.
Can we just go over growing karma?
Okay. Can you just give these to the people who are new?
These are all the same?
Yeah, those are all the same. Those are all the rest I can give them later. All right, thanks. Yeah, this is an article I just handed out last week, and it's on something called the 8 Worldly Dharmas, which we were discussing are, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek term for the things that we chase around in this life that end up keeping us stuck in cyclic existence. So the question is, can we go over the throwing karma? Gosh, I wish I had all my notes from the karma class. In a nutshell, it's, you know, we are creating karma all the time, right? So karma is like, just imagine little seeds that we are generating with every single thought, action, thing that we say. Karma does mean action. So through our actions of body, speech, and mind, we're creating all these seeds. They're all just laying out there like sand on the beach, and when they reach the right conditions, and then they will ripen, and you'll see the results unless they've been purified and burned. So definitely the karmic seeds that you have created in this life and others are out there and waiting for the right conditions. But what's called throwing karma is the karma at the moment of your death, which propels, which kind of sets you off in a certain direction, which is why there's so much emphasis on your state of mind at the time of death, that your state of mind is as calm as possible, so and that you have as many virtuous thoughts as possible, since that kind of propels where things are, it's kind of like a launching pad, from my understanding. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
More or less, right? Yeah. Kind of like when you go to sleep tonight, if you've eaten something really awful and you're really upset about something, that combination will definitely set your dreams in a certain direction, even though you have all kinds of other things going on in your mind, right? You've got all kinds of things that happen to you during the day and all kinds of things that are unique to you that are different from me. But it's all consciousness. You know, that's what the point is. When you're dreaming, that's your mind, that's consciousness unfolding this whole little show, right? Same thing when you die and enter the bardo state. It's consciousness that's moving forward. And so your mind at that moment of death is launching you out there. I don't know if out there is the right word to say. It's in there somewhere. You know, it's just, it's the launching pad. So that's why, and I'll try to bring some more specific definition of that. But before I forget, you all asked a lot of questions last week, and I went right away and talked to Geshe-la. So I better give you my answers, or give you his answers. So what were they? Somebody was asking, oh, gosh, the new folks are going to think y'all are nuts. But they, some of you are asking about, like, in these different realms, if there's male and female, right? So I think there was one question I think you asked about, like, in the hell realms, are there male and female? And Geshe-la said, yes, but there's no entertainment. So I thought that was a riot. I said, no entertainment? He goes, yeah, there may be male and female, but they're not having any fun being male and female. It's 100% suffering all the time, 24/7. I said, okay. I said, what about the other realms? Because I know there's going to come that question. I'll have this answer, and it'll be like, what about the other realms? And he said, yeah, probably, but okay, so we're in the desire realm, right? If we had one of these maps, it'd be you are here in the desire realm. In the form realm, which apparently we've all been in many times, but there are male and female, he says, but they don't necessarily really have sexual organs because, he said, just holding hands brings incredible bliss, and they can generate all this bliss with their minds. So it's not as kind of gross as this state. Formless realm, even farther away. You know, he said, yes, there may be male and female identities, but it's formless, so even farther away from what we're experiencing. So if this sounds really bizarre to you, it's just that, you know, in Buddhist cosmology, there's all these different kinds of realms, all these different possible ways that our consciousness will manifest. The point of all that what is the point of all that? It said that this body, this is the most important thing that I take away from it, that our chance right now, this is what I'm focusing on, is where I am right now. And where I am right now, I have this amazing opportunity being in this realm at this time. So even though it's called the degenerate times, meaning that things have kind of degenerated, the teachings are not as pure as when Buddha taught them, we have so many more obstacles in front of us, that also on the good side creates so much more opportunity for us to create merit and really progress. That anything that we do, coming here on a Monday night, sitting here thinking about this, trying to become better people, wishing that we were free of problems and free of those eight worldly concerns, it's huge, huge. So, you know, it's considered a very, very fortunate rebirth that we have, the opportunities that we have. And, you know, I love this analogy I heard, is that if you had a thorn stuck in your hand, you could take another thorn to help yourself dig it out. And that's kind of like our minds can help us transform our minds. It's our minds that we're trying to transform. Our minds and our consciousness is, and I'm using those interchangeably for some of you who may not have heard that, it's M, capital M for mind, is what we are trying to work with to totally change everything. So I've said before, like, think of consciousness as like a river. And you're only really aware of this one little bend in the river. But you are the keeper of this part of the river. That's what's important. And, you know, what came before, you know, there's nothing you can do about that. You can see, oh, all these things must have come together to form this little bend in the river that I'm responsible for now. That's the point. And now you are so incredibly powerful to affect what's going to happen down the road with that river. You know, you put a lot of pollution in that river, people downstream are going to be, you know, suffering from that. You put a lot of green dye in it on St. Patrick's Day, well, and the whole, you know, people have a little party for a while. So you have incredible amount of control and opportunity. That's the whole point of everything we study in discovering Buddhism and Buddhism at all, is how to work with your mind to change your mind to become enlightened. I know people have asked me, well, how can I become this kind of a person in the next life, or this kind of a person, a tall person? It's really about how to become an enlightened being. And the fact that we can, wow, you know, that's kind of mind-blowing. So to reduce our fear, to increase our merit, that to me is what this part is all about. Because, you know, there is a reason why we're afraid to die. I mean, otherwise we would just be walking out in traffic all day long, right? So there's some good stuff to that, but then there's some stuff that gets in the way. And that's what we've got to try to work with. And that's what I want today to focus on a little bit more than we have in the past couple of weeks, is what comes up for us around our own mortality and what can we do to work with it. So I know His Holiness, I've heard His Holiness say that if we were, you know, if you and I were going to be executed tomorrow, and this was, you know, we're getting our last meal, we've got our last night, in the morning we're going to be executed, we wouldn't really be spending too much time getting attached to each other. You know, we might help each other and support each other and enjoy our meal together, but we wouldn't spend a whole lot of time, like, clinging on to each other, because tomorrow morning we're going to be executed. And, you know, if we knew what to do with our minds, we try to really prepare for that. And so He was making the analogy between that and our lives, that we spend our lives and our time getting all caught up in all kinds of things that aren't necessarily helping us move forward. It doesn't mean that we don't enjoy our relationships and our things and the people around us, but trying to constantly remember and remind all those reasons why we should meditate on death that I listed during the meditation. You know, it's, and before I'd said, if we can think of this life the same way that we think of a hotel room, we go into a hotel room for that weekend, we're thrilled. Nice hotel room I scored. I got this extra bathtub and whatever. Look at this great robe. But we don't really cling to it because we know, you know, we're checking out on Monday morning, paying our bill and going on. So same thing with this life. It doesn't mean that you deny yourself, but it means that your focus is different. So there's this one great definition for renunciation that I always remember. It says, renunciation doesn't mean going away from this world. It means knowing that the world goes away. So if you're aware that the world goes away, that things are impermanent, that you're not going to be, you know, holding on to the station when the train pulls out, then you hold it a little bit lighter. Doesn't mean that you don't enjoy it. You take it for almost more than it's worth. I mean, this life is considered a boat that carries us across a river. That's the way to kind of be remembering, not holding onto the boat, but steering the boat to get us across that river, and not dawdling. So that's to me the balance. There was something else that. Any questions about that I've said so far? All right, I feel like I've just given a big lecture. So what I'd like you to do, especially since we've got a lot of new folks here, is get into your pods again. If you were in a pod last week, you can find it. And what I'm going to have is maybe a new person in each of the different groups. So this always gets complicated, guys. Just hang in there. But I'm going to try to get everybody into their pods, and then each newer person get into one of those groups. Make sense? And then what I want you to do before you start moving around, so I can make this really clear, is I just want you to talk for like 10 or 15 minutes about what you personally want to work on to diminish any fear, anxiety, or whatever comes up for you around dying or losing people who are close to you. It's kind of like this is the way I think about what we're going to be doing is, it's not that you're trying to erase certain thoughts or feelings, right? It's that we're trying to put something else in the mix. So, for example, most of you know, I was my mother's caregiver for like 6 years. She had dementia. It was grueling and difficult. And when she died, I had shingles. And it was just like everything that could go wrong was wrong. And it took me about a year to recover. So still sometimes when I drive around and I see a certain place, all these memories come flooding back, which don't do me a single bit of good. It just like ruins the next 2 or 3 hours because I relive it. And wherever her consciousness is not benefiting from my little trip back into that hole, right? So now what I've learned to do is I'm not going to deny or pretend that those things didn't happen or that it's not painful or difficult, but I also like give myself a little bit of time there and then try to quickly balance with, well, what else? What else? This, that did happen. That was really awful. And what else is, and then I start doing some things. And I've come up with some things. Like right then and there, I can say some mantras that I believe help my mother's consciousness wherever they are. Or I can think, this is one thing that always helps me. She's not there anymore. I am there. I'm the one who's thinking about those things, right? My consciousness is back there reliving that. She's not. That helps. That usually erases it right off the bat, and I can start moving on. Or I start to think about that we finished something. For me, you know, whatever my mom and I were going through, we finished it. I worked that through, and that throwing karma from that event brought me right here. So I my whole point is that we all have stuff like that, and we instead of just trying to make that go away, what else can we balance it with? So in your groups, I want you to kind of identify what the things are that you personally that come up constantly. Maybe it is somebody that you lost, like I'm talking about, but maybe it's your own pending death that you're looking at. So just try to make a list of several things, and then we'll come back together as a group. And if you have time in your group, after you go around and talk about what those are, you can talk about what things might be the balance. And, you know, we don't have a whole lot of time, so don't open up something that's really, really difficult to talk about. You know what those are, and hopefully we can apply the same things later. Okay, so if you know your pod, try to go get in it. We don't want any more than like 5 people because you're not going to get enough time to talk. If you're new, just stay seated, and I'm going to have you join a pod in a minute as soon as we see how many people are in these pods. If you don't have a pod, then stay seated as well. Let's see everybody kind of get in their groups. We can have new pods. It's fine. The whole point is to have like 4 or 5 people in a group. Okay, so now, new folks, stand up and join one of the groups you see. Okay, so that's a new group in that pod. You don't have, okay, why don't, well, let me just see if she's, there's a, okay, all right, that's fine, unless you want to go with one that's 3. It's up to you. Yeah, okay. All right, so everybody got a group. If you have any questions, let me know. Does it make sense? Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
We have about 5 more minutes, so make sure everybody gets a chance to talk. Okay, take a minute to finish up. Okay, and come on back to the larger group.
Awesome. thought your brother was
How did that go? Short? It was like 10 minutes. But we'll finish it all as a larger group then. Anything that you all want to share or discuss or ask questions about, or was that helpful? Yeah?
Do you want the microphone?
Oh, yeah, I guess we will need the microphone if anybody has a thing to say. Were you all able to identify things to balance the fears and worries or whatever? Yeah, what were some of them? Project, and I'll repeat your question until they get another one. There we go.
Okay, now it works. One thing that we discussed was about how facing other people's mortality, we want to be compassionate, mm-hmm. but don't exactly know how to do that with our own mindsets. Or, right. Oh, I don't know if I can be this for this person. I don't know what this person needs, so maybe I don't need to be around this person. Or,
uh-huh.
you know, I don't want to contribute to, you know, the suffering or something.
Right.
And we determine, you know, sometimes compassion is just being selfless and being available to listen to someone.
Right.
You know, maybe someone's sighing and they don't need you to tell them everything's okay because they know it's
right.
not.
Right.
But they
right.
need you to actually listen.
Yeah.
And just be present just in any way. So that's one thing we came up with.
Okay. Yeah, and that reminds me of a book I wanted to recommend to you all. I don't think it's here in the bookstore. But it's by Stephen Levine, Who Dies? Yeah. Who Dies? And another one he wrote is called Meetings at the Edge. And he counseled people, either people who were dying or people who had survived really awful, you know, their child had been murdered or, you know, these awful, what we look to be awful deaths. And the book is written really, well, really easy to read, short chapters, and I read them in my 20s, and I didn't realize I was actually being introduced to Buddhism this way, because he's not talking about Buddhism, he's meeting people wherever they're at with whatever helps them. So it's a really good model for exactly what you're talking about, how to be present. And, you know, sometimes somebody does want to be distracted. Sometimes somebody wants to go down to the depths and have somebody walk them with them. So it's really just being able to kind of be present and know what somebody wants. And he's a really good model for it, because I think we're often afraid that we're not going to be able to help and measure up when, I know for me sometimes, a lot of people would ask, what can I do? And it's like, really, you're already doing it. You know, just sitting here listening, you know, is wonderful.
What was the second title?
Meetings at the Edge. And his last name is Levine. What else did people come up with? Or yeah.
Yes, I had a question. I'll lob it up to the group, and we have just a few minutes to discuss it. But I know from last week it seemed like the stages that we're talking about, where, you know, you're maybe dying of cancer or some illness that you know ahead of time, and
right.
you're able to, you know, resolve a lot of issues and go through the stages.
Right.
Now, how does this translate to a sudden death?
Right.
Or a wreck or a...
Okay. Is the mic working? Okay, so I'll repeat his question, which is that if you're dying of an illness and you have, and I think you're particularly asking about the stages of death, the death dissolution meditation we did? Okay. So that meditation, which we're going to do in a little bit, where you're actually meditating on the experience of dying and the different stages, that's his question was, what about if it's a sudden death? Yes, in a sudden death, you're not going to have that, that all those stages that we meditated on will be speeded up so fast that you might not have time to really meditate on them. But still, if you're meditating on death and you're using dreams like we've been talking about to try to constantly question whether this is reality, you will have a different experience than the bardo. You might not be able to focus and have that kind of experience through the death dissolution process, but you still might be able to have a calm mind. So in the very beginning, I talked about how I wanted to be able to have a calm mind regardless of my kind of death. So if I was suddenly murdered, I could still have a calm mind like Gandhi had when he was murdered. He's not going to have those slow stages of dying, but he's going to have a peaceful mind, which means that where his mind is next after that moment of death will also be relatively peaceful. He's not dying angry at this person, you know, filled with anger or fear or vengeance. He died saying the Hindu word for God. So it's a very powerful model for us. So we can use things all around us all the time to try to... we can use everything. That's what the whole, I've been talking about all class is, you know, use your dreams, use your experiences, use getting upset, use losing your patience, use everything to try to work with your mind to calm your mind. Yeah.
Our discussion also dealt with sudden death, but not sudden death of ourselves, but of a loved one. And how do we respond to that? And, you know, the state of our mind goes to panic. And, you know, is there something we can do that would,
uh-huh.
or something you can suggest that would, you know, be a more positive
okay.
reaction?
When the person is dying, like there's a sudden death and you're there, or you mean after they've died, how to stay positive?
I think more like as you're finding the news and not knowing the state of the person, like if there's a car accident and you don't know whatever's happened
right.
to that person and you know they've been potentially involved and potentially haven't survived, then,
okay.
you know, what about the state of, you know, our minds as we, you know, think about that?
Right, right. So that mic's not working at all? Oh, it's on. Okay. I just have to be aware of people at home if they're hearing the questions because... So the first thing would be to try to keep your mind as calm as possible and just, I mean, I know what Geshe would tell me when something like that's come up, which is just start to saying, Om Mani Padme Hum. Just start saying mantras for them every time that they come up in your mind to do that. So even if it's not a situation like that, if it's somebody who's just died, then every time they come up in your mind, try to say something positive. If you're Buddhist, then you would say a mantra, a mani mantra. If you're another religion, you would say that prayer. You know, something positive for them, because I think even as you heard Venerable Rene say that our thoughts, that it's said in the bardo state that when people have died, that they're clairvoyant. They can pick up thoughts and feelings from others instantly. Whether they will pick up yours or not, it's hard to say because they might be going through their own stuff. But it's possible. And so the stronger connection you have to them, the more possible they'll be picking up your thoughts. Which is why, like I said, you know, it didn't help my mom at all for me to be freaking out or upset or gloomy. You know, I understand that I'm going to feel that way, and then I try to balance it with something for her. Which to me is the wonderful thing, because I don't know if any of you have heard of this book, The Year of Magical Thinking by Joan Didion. Her husband died suddenly, right? She spent, in one part of that book, she's talking about the whole year of grief. She said, it did kind of hit dawn on her at one point that, we're, you know, there's something about him, too. Like, he's going through something. She can't see him. I don't even know what her beliefs were. But she didn't know what to do with that. She was really just focusing on being the survivor. What I love about having a spiritual practice is there's something that I can do for the person who's gone. There's my feelings and my grief, but there's also their consciousness, and now I can do something for that. It's kind of getting away from your question, but if you don't know the status, you know, you've heard the news, there's an accident, then immediately just start saying some prayers and trying to keep your mind as calm as possible, because if they have died, then hopefully they can pick up your prayers. And if they haven't, you know, then it's not going to hurt. You'll be adding to something around them. And I know it's really hard, and this sounds really simple, but I just try to put this in the mix of my mind as well. you know, that quote that His Holiness is always saying, that if there's something you can do, then definitely do it. And if there's nothing you can do, then worrying about it is going to be so counterproductive. So, you know, think that through. What can I do right now? Maybe you can get in the car and drive somewhere and help somebody, and maybe you can sit there and say some prayers. Yeah.
I guess it's karma if you have a violent death.
Yeah.
And how, well, I don't know if you can answer this. How would you prepare for that? So if let's say someone was trying to hurt you and you want to stay alive, so perhaps you might hurt them back or have some very quick thoughts that aren't positive.
Right.
But you might die
right.
in that.
Right. So there's like a couple of questions in there, right?
Is there anything that anyone can do to mitigate that?
Well, I think it's hard to know until you know the specifics, right? So Gandhi's shot. There's nothing he can do to take that bullet out. He says the Hindu word for God and dies. If he could have stopped the person from shooting him, I'm sure he would. You know, so we can try to think of simpler things in our life where we're having to stop somebody from doing something that harms us without hating them.
Oh.
You know, I mean, you can try it on a more simple level of what in our daily life are we doing. You know, somebody's running a red light, you can slam on the horn.
I just thought of that, yeah.
There's that meditation where you imagine that you're in a canoe and there's another canoe coming at you. You can't see it clearly enough. It's in a distance and the canoe is coming at you. And what comes up in your mind? You know, what arises? And they keep coming at you. They keep coming at you. And what are you doing to try to get them out of the way? You know, and then finally, I think in the meditation, you see that there's nobody in the canoe. There is still coming at you. You're still going to have to do something. But all of a sudden, all of the anger and whatever you're projecting onto who's driving that canoe dissipates. You're just trying to take care of yourself and get out of the way. So, you know, those kinds of things, I think, help us prepare for self-defense. Because that's what you're basically talking about. How do you defend yourself without generating hatred and revenge? So I took self-defense classes because I wanted to do exactly that. And it's really just about, you know, and Aikido is all about using the energy to move it out of your way without harming them. So it's a huge, I mean, we're all, now, this is just like I said before, it's kind of like we're playing touch football here, we're throwing the ball around, and then we want to go out and do play the Super Bowl, you know, so you all are asking me Super Bowl questions. Just to be clear, what happens if somebody's trying to kill me? But, I mean, like I said, that's what launched me into this whole practice. It's not something that we're going to be able to turn around overnight. But, you know, I know that that's exactly what's got me started is that question. How do I, if I die a violent death, how do I keep a calm mind? And if you've had a violent experience and you know your mind is, but you know where your mind is going to be. So it takes a lot of work. But I, you know, after years of doing this and meditating on that very question, I had a dream one night that somebody was trying to kill me. And I, in the dream, I said, wait a minute, you know, I'm going to die. And I just started saying mantras and keeping my mind calm. I was going to die. What's the difference if they're going to shoot me or if I'm in a plane crash? You know, it's the same point is, yeah, if I can get that plane to get up right, man, let's do that. If I can't, I got to calm my mind. Yeah. Yeah.
I hope this isn't a Super Bowl question. I was a pedestrian hit by a truck 7 years ago, and I remember kind of coming to, but my question is, through the experience, I was really calm, which is not my personality. There was a period of time that, like, I could hear my husband trying to get me to come.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, like, a weird peacefulness.
Mm-hmm.
So is that the same, I guess, is mm-hmm. the question?
Is that the same as?
Is, like, keeping a calm mind.
Right.
Because I had a lot of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So is that the same in that experience as keeping a calm mind during a violent death?
Well, when you felt that calmness, had the accident already happened?
Yeah.
Okay. But I think the difference is that if you're watching that car coming right towards you, at that, sometimes, you know, that's the part that's harder to have the calm mind.
Yeah, I saw it, like, because mm-hmm. I turned, mm-hmm. and I was calm, and mm-hmm. but when some consciousness came back, mm-hmm. moments, because I flew so far mm-hmm. into a guardrail, I was knocked out for quite some time, mm-hmm. I was very calm mm-hmm. before I could speak or I was awake.
Right.
I was very calm. And even when some consciousness, there's like a flutter of consciousness that I got, I wasn't sure if I was going to wake up or not, but mm-hmm. I was very calm.
Right. But that's an awesome thing to be able to draw on then. You know, I mean, sometimes if people have seen the movie Fearless, this man now has no more fear of death because he was so close to it in this plane crash. Yeah.
Now I know it's not going to hurt.
Right. So I guess the thing is, you know, in a violent situation, it's a little, I mean, you could probably answer that question yourself. You know, if it wasn't exactly that same, that's a kind of violence. But there's a kind of panic that you don't want, and it's very hard to just make that disappear if you're in certain situations. So again, we were talking about, now we're all talking about like worst case scenario. This I used to teach a self-defense class, right? We'd start off with like, I'd warn everybody, don't give me worst case scenarios because we're just talking about what we're capable of doing, you know? The pen can be a weapon. Let's look at that. Okay, but what if the guy's got a grenade, you know? I mean, so, I'm not saying your questions are bad. I'm trying to excuse my answers because it's really, really difficult. And the more, basically the answer is the more we can practice with our mind and slowly build up to those like, okay, could I do this in that situation? What if I had to jump out of a window? What would I do? You know, I'd do that game with myself and what about this and what about that? I think we can all imagine some situations where it'd be probably pretty hard to keep a calm mind, you know, and we can try to tiptoe into that and do what we can to keep it. I love that show Locked Up Abroad because I always do that. Like, okay, could I keep a calm mind there? Could I keep a calm mind there? I mean, it would be really tough, you know? And this one monk I heard of who had been, you know, tortured and imprisoned in Tibet for a long, long time. When he was able to escape, and His Holiness was talking to them and him about his whole experience, and the man said, "Yeah, it was really dangerous. It was really dangerous." And His Holiness thought he meant a specific torture that this man was enduring. He said, "Oh no, what was really dangerous is I almost lost my compassion." So that is, you know, the real, real tricky thing to do if you're being tortured, you know, or abducted or anything like that. So we try, you know, do as much as we can with our minds. And we will be able to expand more and more and more. The more practice, the better chance we have, in no matter what the situation will be. I mean, that's my belief. As Geshe-la always says, nothing gets worse with practice, you know. So we just keep practicing. And all I would just say is make sure you do it in a way that, all of this is supposed to be freeing. I mean, Buddhism is about liberating us and freeing us. So we don't want to do a practice that we come out of feeling worse. So that's why I'm always saying, you know, you need guaranteed success and build on that. That's my pitch, and I'm sticking with it. So have some, work with it and build, and then challenge yourself to little harder ones. Okay. Somebody else had their hand up, yeah.
What about becoming accustomed to certain things? Because isn't that part of, if you think certain ways, you become accustomed to that, and that may be a bad thing if you, let's say you're proud. You're always proud.
Right.
And you become accustomed to pride, and that affects your karma.
Right.
Is there a danger in this scenario?
Of being accustomed to being tortured?
A victim, yeah.
Oh. Well, no, like I said before, with doing the death meditation, you're not creating the causes to become victim.
I forgot. Yeah.
You know, so I mean, just don't focus on that part of the meditation. Like, you're not spending a long time meditating on the scenario of how you, whatever the worst case scenario is. It's more about generating the compassion. So, like when I'm sitting in my comfortable room watching Locked Up Abroad, right? If I'm generating a lot of anger towards the people who are abducting somebody else, that's complete failure. But if I can sit there in my comfortable room and try to imagine, because I know the person's going to get out, I know everything's going to be okay, right? I can try there to generate the positive mind states that I'm talking about and have some success. So the whole focus should be on the success.
Okay.
Yeah, does that make sense? And same like with the death dissolution meditation, which we're going to do in a minute, you're not creating the causes to die by doing this meditation. You're creating the causes to be familiar with the death process so that you won't have fear. You're meditating on, you know, a sudden death. You're meditating then on, you're creating the causes to then be aware that, okay, this is the Bardo state. When I walk around all day long and think, is this a dream? Is this a dream? It's creating the causes so that in my dream I'll say, is this a dream? And then I'll be aware and I can do something positive. So by the way, I can report that between last week and this week, I had a semi-lucid dream. I was really tired. I guess it was the night that I left here because I was exhausted. That night, something was going on in the dream, and like there were all these. I think I was like at the airport, and I couldn't get through security. And I said, "Wait a minute, I think this is a dream." And so I pushed off into the sky, and then, but I kept coming, kind of falling down, going, "Maybe this is real." But I did that several times, and as I went up in the air, I said, "Compassion," and then I would come back down. And then I push off again. I say, compassion! And then I fall back down. But for those of you new folks who are wondering what in the world I'm talking about, it's, you know, we take everything at face value. This is real. And so the point of, like, challenging all day long, like, is this really real? Is to break through that, you know, so that when we're in our dream state, we can, I don't have to take this tiger jumping, and this is my dream, you know. Generate some compassion for that tiger. Fly. Do whatever you want. When we're in the Bardo state, same thing. We don't have to be then just the victim of whatever things are coming up in front of us. We'll recognize this is the Bardo state, and as Geshe-la says, practice compassion in the Bardo state. So the more we can do that all day long, the more we'll be able to do it in our dream and Bardo state and next life. That's the whole point. Any other questions? Because before we do the death dissolution meditation, next week is our last week, and we've got two things. A test. For those people who are looking, who are definitely wanting the certificate, then it's a requirement. And the test is either to have memorized the death dissolution process, similar to the way that I lead it. So for those of you who your first time, come up and pick this up for me later. But what you'll do is you'll take the signs. You don't have to memorize all the factors dissolving. You're taking the signs, the external, internal signs, and memorizing those so that you can walk yourself through that process, just like the way I'm going to lead you through it. Or you are memorizing the 9-point death meditation. And if you're not taking the test, it's only part of the class. Please come anyway because you can help me administer this. Okay, so you're not going to get a grade. You just, you know, you might have to do it over, but it's going to be something that then you'll have with you. You'll memorize it. You can use it forever. And what we're also going to do is I'm going to try to bring. I'm going to go to the bait shop and bring a whole bunch of worms and crickets. So then after the test, we'll walk around the stupa and release them out into the little woods over here. And if you have any that you want to bring, then bring them on. But that'll be part of our, we'll do a whole little talk about their future lives and why we're doing this and on, and then that's the way we'll end, okay? All right, so now we're going to do this meditation on the death dissolution process. And so for those of you who are memorizing it, you'll see that I've memorized mine before, not in the same exact order as this. I'm going through each stage, each cycle, but they might be in a little bit of different order, different words. That's fine, as long as it's the same basic concept. Okay, any questions about the death dissolution meditation before I start it? So again, this is a meditation on what we experience when we die. you know, if you've been around people who are dying, some of them die pretty quickly within a couple of hours. Some of them, it could be 4 or 5 days going through the stages. There's no, you know, it's hard to say how long you'll be in each of these stages. But the point of the meditation is so that you're familiar with them, they don't frighten you. If you're unfamiliar with them and you're kind of fighting it in that process, then they might appear in kind of scary, nightmarish ways. But if you're familiar with these processes, then it's not frightening. Then it's just like, this is what's happening. Just like when you go to sleep at night, like when I'm really overtired and I'm trying to fall asleep and something in me is fighting it, it's not good. I can't fall asleep. I'm just fighting it. And yeah, so I kind of think of it like that, that if we're aware of it, it becomes a process that we're moving through calmly and very differently than what we might imagine. Okay, so get in a comfortable position. Just check all of your posture that I led you through before. Take in a few deep breaths. And know that this is a calming meditation, not a fearful meditation. Your mind is already calm. You know that you're dying. You're aware that you're dying. You have no regrets. You've said your goodbyes. You feel at peace. You're confident in your refuge, in your karma, to move you down the river to the next bend. So without any clinging, without any worry, the first cycle of the death dissolution stages arise, and our body is thin and weak. Our vision is dark and blurry. Our arms and legs feel like they're falling. We can no longer blink our eyes. The natural glow of our body is gone. And internally, the internal sign is the appearance of a mirage, a watery mirage. Mirage is here and smoke is coming. So then the second stage. You can no longer feel the difference between pain, pleasure, or neutrality. You can no longer remember the difference between pain, pleasure, and neutrality. Your mouth and nose dry and pucker. All bodily fluids dry. You can no longer hear external sounds. You can no longer hear internal sounds. And the appearance of smoke arises. Mirage is gone. Smoke is here. And fireflies are coming. And then the third cycle. Can no longer remember the names of the people who are close to you. You can no longer remember the relationships of the people who are close to you. Your inhalation is weak and your exhalation is strong and jagged. Can no longer digest food or smell. And the appearance of fireflies or sparks arises. Smoke is gone, fireflies are here, and light is coming. And the fourth cycle. You can no longer move your body. You can no longer remember the mundane details of this life. You can no longer inhale. Your tongue becomes thick and dark, and you can no longer taste. You can no longer feel your body. You can no longer have any mental conceptions. And the appearance of a flickering flame appears. The flame gets brighter, and now there's pervasive white light. Then there's pervasive red light. Then there's a thick darkness and a feeling of fainting. Then there's a very clear dawning, the dawning of the clear light of the mind. Like a bright sky at sunrise. At this moment, with all of your concentration, you meditate on emptiness. Whatever your ability to meditate on emptiness is, you bring all your awareness to that, which fills you with bliss, peace, boundless peace. How'd that feel? Peaceful? Okay. If you have the book that I recommended, can you remember the name?
Advice on Dying.
Yeah, Advice on Dying. Then that chapter, especially on those last stage where you see the clear light of mind, really check that out and read it thoroughly. Because the more you understand about emptiness and the meditations on emptiness, then when you're doing this exercise, this meditation, that's where you would try to really stretch out that part on emptiness is at the end. If you are reading through this and memorizing it for this next week, you don't have to give, when you get to like the fifth cycle, you don't have to give all the cycles or the causes of the appearance. It's just the appearance then. It's just the internal signs. So just like I did, once you get to the flickering light, then all you're doing is white light, red light, clear light. Okay? Because when I meditate on this, I'm not going through like, okay, this is causing that and this element is doing that. You should know it all. But when I'm actually doing the meditation, I'm just trying to have that experience. Okay? But it's still, this whole chart is really helpful because it tells you what's dissolving into what and why something is appearing. And then the more you can do that meditation, you know, some people do this like six times a day. The Dalai Lama does this meditation like six times a day. And Geshe-la has encouraged me to do it like as I'm falling asleep. As I said before, I never get through the whole thing before I'm asleep. But it, again, it sets that habit of noticing and trying to, as my consciousness is shifting from awake to asleep, then I'm in the habit of trying to go through these stages. Okay. Did anybody have any worries about that meditation, or did it make you nervous or anything? Okay. So again, it should be peaceful feeling. You should feel ready and like excited almost. And if you listen to Venerable Rene's talk when he was here, he's like, you know, it can be amazing, right? So it takes a lot of work to have that experience, but I just love that meditation that he had us go through, because it really sounded exciting. And I think for me, one of the things that I try to balance in that mix is I think of how many things in my life I have fretted until they actually happened. When they were actually happening, it was like, oh, you know, but it's the buildup to them that, you know, of course, that's where a lot of the suffering is, when something is actually happening and we're as prepared as possible. So I think the same thing is true for me. Like when I'm actually involved in this, I think I'll have a lot less panic and fear than leading up to it. Okay, so I guess it's time. And this is our death of this class. We talk about how, you know, we start our class, all the aggregates come together, and now we can label it class, and then we have the class, and we have the experience, and then we have a little death, and then we have a rebirth next time. So we are now having calm death of this class, and we do it by dedicating, just like throughout our day we dedicate, and through our life we dedicate, so that the merit that we've created by coming together and all the energy that we put into thinking and sitting and listening and talking and sharing doesn't just go to waste. So I talked before about how amazing it is that we can collect in such an amazing amount of good merit in this lifetime. If we don't dedicate it, it's not lost, but it's not directed. And so Geshe always talks about, I've taken him to the flea market, and he sees people with these puppies in strollers wearing clothes, and he's like, so they created the karma to be like treated like humans and have such incredible diets, and they're left money and wills, but they didn't probably dedicate their karma well enough to become a human. Or he says, like, you know, like really, really wealthy people like Donald Trump must have created such incredible generosity in other lives to have this much wealth. But, you know, and we are creating an incredible amount of karma. But remember to dedicate it for where you want it to go, what bank account you want that to be deposited into. So if you want it for your future rebirth, let's now mentally dedicate so that it's not lost in some other account. Another way to think about it is, think of it like grains of sand that you are now mixing with like all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and holy beings, all the merit that they have created, you put it right into that river. So it's joining that river of merit. It's then made even stronger. And then you just imagine that ripening in the way that you want. The obstacles between you and your complete enlightenment diminishing because of the merit that you've created. That your life and your future lives are all going to be moving you right towards enlightenment. And that's the way you dedicate. Okay? Thank you all for coming and all of your attention. If you're new and you want to pick up some of the handouts I mentioned, please come on and get them. And next week, oh yeah, one other thing. Somebody asked me if you can get stuck in the bardo. And the answer is no. What Geshe-la meant to say to that question was that people get kind of, and it's not really stuck forever, but they can kind of end up in the spirit realms, right, where they're not really taking a full rebirth. They're rebirthed into this spirit realm. But no, the bardo will end in 49 days if you haven't taken rebirth before that. So sorry to throw that out there at the end, but I want to make sure all your questions are answered. Okay. Good night.